Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Crime and Investigations, I Am a Killer is a brand new 10-part true crime documentary series produced in partnership with Netflix by an excellent production team including me, Danny Tipping.
And me, Tom Adams. Each episode tells the story of a prisoner convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
In this podcast, we'll be going into the making of each episode, revealing what it was like to produce this incredible series.
James Robertson. I'm 54. I've been in prison for 37 years. You know, I finished my original time way back in the late 80s. That's, I got a bunch of other time. I don't even really know how much time, about 100 years, I guess. I just got to the point where I said, man, fuck this shit, I'm going on death row. So I said, well, I'll just go ahead and kill my cellmate. I felt pretty confident I could overpower him. Believe me, it was premeditated.
Episode 2, Means to an End, is the story of James Robertson, who actually ends up in prison initially, not for murder, but for a break and entry, and is taken into prison. And then once in prison, gets into various scrapes, doesn't he? And those violent encounters escalate. And his initial sentence, he's a teenager at the time, in his late teens. So his sentence escalates to the point where he ultimately ends up on death row. So this is a guy that didn't commit murder on the outside, but ends up in the prison system, and within the prison system becomes, by his own admission, a violent criminal.
He's a scary character. I know that the team that interviewed him, when he walked in, he was an angry man, and Stu talks about him staring. This was a case of the way this prison worked was there was no glass. They were in a room 10 by 10 with James, and when he was led in, although he's shackled and there's a prison guard there, they were on edge. He's an intimidating character.
Undoubtedly, he's a physically imposing character who is, you know, has a long track record of extremely violent crime in prison. But I think the point of this, or not the point of this episode, but one of the things we see, that he is, as much as any of them in this series, the product of his environment. That he, early on, he didn't have the parental support that many of us have. He does go off the rails. He ends up in prison, becomes hardened in prison. And I think all our contributors, including those that knew him before and the nurse, would all agree that he has responded to his environment. He's chosen response is to become even harder, to dish out the violence rather than to receive it. And at the point he feels he's no longer able to do that, he takes himself out of the game by killing his flatmate and retreating, if you like, to death row to spend whatever time he's got left in a slightly more comfortable cell, and left to his own devices. But later, so after we interviewed him our first time, we're very lucky to meet one of James's relatives, his cousin.
Yeah.
And whose familial resemblance is uncanny, I thought.
Yeah.
Who lives a very comfortable middle class, just in the next county, I think, with a young family, in relatively comfortable surroundings, who had a slightly different upbringing than James and was afforded probably the opportunities that you might expect, reasonably expect, a teenager growing up in that part of the world to have. And it's a real sliding doors type moment. This could have been the life that James Robertson may have led had he not taken that path. And their parallel lives are really striking, I think.
He's a character who's done what he's done, and we can't say that it's because of the system. You know, he has to be accountable for his actions.
Oh, he's very much made, and he's made conscious choices.
Yeah, yeah. And but equally, the programmes aren't apologising for him. I mean, what I think we had to be careful of was saying, and it's because of this that he's turned out like this. Mm. And I think, I mean, we've certainly tried not to do that. We've simply shown what the situation was and explained what happened. And then it's up to the viewer to decide the reasons why, or if things could have been different or whatever. But we're not saying because he was given this hand, he's turned out like this and it's not his fault. He's made.
No, but we're posing the question that perhaps there was he could have gone a different way. I mean, as any of the characters
what,
could.
And then what is, I think what I found interesting was after that first interview, as I say, he's an intimidating character, and yet there's a moment of humanity when he talks about Daryl and he understands that that's the person who loves him and looks after him and cares for him. And he's just not had that before.
Yeah, there is somebody there that actually is does worry about him and will be upset, you know, if he meets his end in prison. Yeah. Up until that point, he had perhaps rightly assumed that nobody did care or was interested. Yeah. It's a different film than the other 10, and it does pose lots of questions.
Since we've made contact with James, something that he said quite a few times, I've never had a family, never had anybody to love, nobody loved me. Do I think it's been a wasted life? Yeah, I think it's been a wasted life. I think it all just began from when he was a toddler. There's parents, you know, mothers and fathers out there that just love their kids to death, and that was in the case with his mom and dad. He had a hard life growing up, and then, of course, straight to prison when he was 16 or 17. You know, it's not like he was born a monster or evil. The guy's just never been loved.
When we went back to interview him, obviously we maintained correspondence in the time James Robertson's in prison in Florida, and we wrote another letter. James wrote back with lots of questions, wrote to Ross, who's the producer director that directed this film, and he had a lot of questions that we answered and wrote back to him, and when we turned up, when the team turned up to film, they found that actually James Robertson hadn't received that letter. On the day they turned up to film the second interview, he hadn't received it. And it was touch and go whether he would come out and do the second interview. And they had to pass him, I understand, a photocopy of their responses so he could read it in his cell before he agreed to come back and take part in the second interview. So that one could have gone south.
You can see how his trust in us grew actually over the course of his letter writing, because it went from one word answers to questions we posed him to, you know, starting to tell us about his life and what had happened to him.
And I think Ross, he did have, you know, as much of a rapport as you can build in 2 1-hour interviews. I think we were very straight with him. We gave him the opportunity to tell his story, and he was reassured that this would be, you know, warts and all, there was going to be no soft soaping. And I think he respected that. And he did, you know, he's not an unintelligent guy. He's self-aware. He knows what he's saying. He's accepted, he's chosen his fate and accepted it. And so he didn't pull any punches. And it's a really powerful, powerful episode.
Yeah.
I knew that they was going to use any excuse that they could to keep me on CM. Any excuse. I mean, you just sit in that cell all damn day, man. That's inhumane, man. I mean, that's crazy. Finally, I got mad, and I said, I'm going to go ahead and kill somebody.
I remember seeing that first interview with him and just thinking there was more. You know, how much of this was just a mask this is where I am, I'm going to make the best of it, and that's what I'm going to show. And the challenge from a programme-making perspective was to see if you could, as it were, speak to the real James. And I think Ross did a great job, actually, because I just felt it was beginning to crack at the end. You know, we were beginning to see that character come through. Yeah.
And I think within the limited time we had with him, Ross and the team did an incredible job, because it's not the character we meet at the top of the show. You've got a much better understanding of who perhaps James Robertson is and who he could have been. But again, that's the question we set up for the audience, and we couldn't hope to answer that in a 50-minute film. But again, I think it confounds the audience and challenges you to think a little bit more about, you know, who these people are. But again, you know, James isn't looking for... He's certainly not making excuses. He's not looking for necessarily for forgiveness but perhaps understanding. But again, it's another one that when we all sat around, you know, I was coming in and out of the process. I'd read the stories and the scripts initially, and we're seeing little bits and pieces of the interviews, but I was seeing the films as they're already pretty well progressed. So I sat down not knowing what to expect, having read really James Robinson's rap sheet, and perhaps formed an opinion of who this character was, and then at the end of the viewing having to probably rethink or reevaluate. And that happened in nearly every episode. I think the one page kind of rap sheet of any one of these guys doesn't even go anywhere near to giving the full story.
Yeah.
If you had any sort of very brief message you wanted to convey, or a way that you want to be remembered, what would you say?
Somebody that always speaks the truth. You know?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, Ross, who's a producer director, is not a man easily intimidated, I would suggest, and is a well-seasoned director who's interviewed lots of difficult contributors. And he said at the time he didn't initially, when James Robertson, who is, as we said, a physically intimidating character, entered the room, that he wasn't initially intimidated because he was in his bubble and he was primed to take this next hour, prizing the interview out of this the potentially difficult character. It wasn't until after he left the room, and bearing in mind this is, as Tom mentioned before, an interview that took place sitting opposite him. There was no glass dividing. We're in Florida now. This is an interview room where they sat on plastic chairs opposite each other. It wasn't until afterwards Ross said that actually, he took a moment to think, actually that could have been.
But again, you've only got an hour to... You've only got an hour to engage with this person, and the niceties that you're touching on really difficult subjects.
Yeah.
It's hard to for anybody to go in and start asking people these kinds of questions.
Well, if you sat down opposite anybody and sat down, tell me the worst thing you've ever done, go.
Yeah, yeah. And you're against the clock. You've got an hour, so there's so little time to generate any kind of rapport, but equally you can't just dive in. So it's a balancing act between getting some kind of relationship and knowing that the clock's ticking and you've got to get what you can get.
Yeah, and with a certain amount of journalistic integrity, knowing that we, of course, it would be easier to phrase the questions in the nicest way possible and to tread carefully around the sensitive issues and ask the sort of questions that you think might upset the contributor, but that wouldn't get us to where we needed to be. And I think the producers and directors of these shows have been extremely brave, actually, in what and how they approached them. They didn't pull any punches. And I think they that was rewarded because I think the contributors, the inmates, appreciated that. We didn't tread round the sensitive issues. We asked the questions we wanted to ask and they answered them.
James Robertson got wound up, not necessarily actually from our questions, from probing, but he's the type of person, I got the sense, who would get onto a theme and would wind himself up almost. As he elaborated, he would get more irritated by the themes he was talking about and get angrier and angrier.
And I think what you're seeing is that anger, yes, frustration.
Yeah.
Probably. And he, you know, and I think it's probably one of the first times he's confronted, you know, he's been in prison predominantly on his own, or certainly, you know, in his most recent stretch, he's been on death row, and hasn't probably had many opportunities to discuss, you know, what he did and why he did it. And so we're giving him a very short window with somebody that's genuinely interested in hearing his side of the story. And it all comes out. You know, actually, I think he does a pretty good job of restraining himself in delivering those.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, it's an incredible watch and one that leaves you probably...
He's just blatant about it, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. You know, more than any of the other characters in the series.
He challenges you.
Yeah. Really. He knows what he's done and he knows why we're there.
Yeah.
And it's a very powerful interview because of that. But, you know, and it leaves you asking as many questions as it answers, without a doubt.
We'd love to hear what you think of the series. Comment on Facebook or Twitter with hashtag IAmAKiller. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe to this podcast series.
The I Am A Killer podcast is hosted by Tom Adams and Danny Tipping and is produced by Sam Pearson, Steph Nardilli and Matt Talent, with editing by Susanna Lawrence.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.